Gotta jump down, spin around and pick a bale of cotton. Gotta jump down, spin around and pick a bale of day. Gotta jump down, spin around and pick a bale of cotton. Gotta jump down, spin around and pick a bale of day.
Gotta jump down, spin around and pick a bale of cotton. Gotta jump down, spin around and pick a bale of day. Gotta jump down, spin around and pick a bale of cotton. Gotta jump down, spin around and pick a bale of day.
I saw a skeeter on my head. Whoop. Blinked his eye and I killed him dead.
Gotta jump down, spin around, weed a patch of turnip. Gotta jump down, spin around, weed a patch of day. Gotta weed a patch of turnip. Gotta jump down, spin around, weed a patch of turnip. Gotta jump down, spin around, weed a patch of day.
I saw a gal in calico. Whoop. She tripped and fell and she didn't say hello.
Gotta jump down, cook a mess of greens. Gotta jump down, spin around, cook a pot of day. Gotta jump down, cook a mess of greens. Gotta jump down, spin around, cook a pot of day. Gotta cook a pot of day. Gotta spin around, spin around.
I got a pig who's nice and greasy. Whoop. All you ladies, take it easy.
Gotta jump down, spin around, pull the pail of water. Gotta jump down, spin around, pull the pail of day. Gotta jump down, spin around, pull the pail of water. Gotta jump down, spin around, pull the pail of day.
Little Sally jumped down, throw the pail of water. Little Joe jumped down, throw the pail of day.
Little Sally jumped down, little Joe jumped down. Gotta throw the pail of water. Gotta jump down, whoop.
I don't know, but I've been told a gopher really don't live in a hole.
He don't. Gotta jump down, spin around, sweat a pail of water. Gotta jump down, spin around, sweat a pail of day. Gotta jump down, spin around, sweat a pail of water. Gotta jump down, spin around, sweat a pail of day.
Won't pick a bale of cotton.
Won't throw a pail of water.
Won't cook a mess of greens.
Won't sweat a pail of day. Won't jump down, spin around, spin around, spin around, spin around, spin around, spin around. Won't jump down, spin around, sweat a pail of water. Won't jump down, spin around, sweat a pail of day. Won't jump down, spin around, sweat a pail of water. Won't jump down.
All right. We're going to know a little bit about picking cotton before this hour is up. Maybe a few other jobs as well as we work our way through this hour. Want to remind you, hello everybody. It's Friday, 5 p.m. It's time for How Music Changed on our American Hit Radio program here on Fridays. We do this every Friday at 5 p.m. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, with my beloved spouse, Heidi Morales. Aww. Ryan, here to help me, keep me on track. Earl Holder behind the board also trying to help me keep things together here. I hope you heard last week. Last week we had begun a series which we call How the Blues Began, or Birth of the Blues.
Birth of the Blues.
Which was, last week was part one of our show. If you wish to catch up with us, you can hear that show on shutupandlisten.com. That's S-H-A-D-D-U-P and listen. Today we're going to continue that show with part two, the middle of a three-part series that we're going to dedicate to the birth of the blues, which will finally be completed when we reach the person who's considered the father of the blues, W.C. Handy. Today we're going to cover some middle bits. Now, if you recall, if you were listening last week, we covered about two of the major ingredients that I think went into forming what the blues ultimately became. To simplify things more than anything, you could say that the five ingredients as I see them that went into formulating the blues would be field hollers, work songs, shouts, which is to say religious shouts and religious music, even in the secular form of a shout, dance music, which is to say the instrumentation and things that were done to make for party atmospheres, and folk music, of course. Folk music, minstrelsy, the white influence even through ragtime. All of these things came together. Now, last week we looked, if you recall, we looked at field hollers. We tied that in. We showed that there was an Islamic influence there, perhaps, that came from West Africa, and the Islamic influence came over to here, which is what maybe gave birth to the field hollers. And we spent a good amount of time on the shouts as well, the religious side of what gave birth to the blues. Today, I hope to take a good hard look at two other aspects of what gave birth to the blues, most notably work songs and the folk music aspect of it. And what we had just heard was a work song, and that's Harry Belafonte. Now, if you were as old as I am, you might even remember that song from when you were a kid. It was when Harry Belafonte had his hits like Banana Boat. He was doing all of these authentic songs from African-American culture, and that song was one of them. There was even parodies done by Alan Sherman and stuff like that. You'd hear it on cartoons and various parts of the media. That song would be around. The thing is, I guess most people just thought of it as a play song, but it's anything but. Although that is a contemporary recording, it is a very accurate portrayal of what the song might have been sung like in the fields for cotton picking. Cotton picking is a very fast and demanding job. And of course, with the invention of the cotton gin, all of a sudden, it could almost be said that the cotton gin helped to spur slavery on a little bit longer than it might have otherwise, because it made it easier to clean cotton, which means all they really needed was a lot of people to pick it, and they wanted them to pick it fast.
Right.
So they would obviously need, and this is the beauty of African-American culture when they were here and as slaves, the way that they would pass the time to just break down the monotony of the job, not to mention the pain, the physical pain involved in cotton picking. I mean, that is so rough on your hands.
I can only imagine.
If anybody's ever done it, I never have. I just read about it. Your fingers will get rubbed raw, blood red raw. And what you would do is you'd sing to distract yourself from the pain. And that's pretty much what we just heard there was Harry Belafonte doing a fairly accurate modernization of how the song was utilized. I do have a field recording of the song, and I'd like to play that now. This is pretty much the same thing, but you're going to notice, of course, that the tempo is slowed down considerably. The reason is because this group of men are not picking cotton any longer. This is post-slavery. This is what would happen if you applied the same song to a different job. For example, if you were laying a train track, or in this exact instance, if you were cutting wood with an axe and you were singing the same song.
Will I
pick a bale a day?
Oh, you jump down and turn around.
Pick a bale of cotton.
Oh, you jump down and turn around.
Pick a bale a day.
Oh, never will I
pick a bale of cotton.
Oh, never will I
pick a bale a day.
Oh, Mr. Solo Master Zaga,
pick a bale of cotton.
Oh, Mr. Solo Master Zaga,
pick a bale a day.
But never will I
pick a bale of cotton.
Oh, never will I
pick a bale a day.
Oh, Mr. Jimmy Hogan Head,
pick a bale of cotton.
Oh, Master Jimmy Connie Head,
pick a bale a day.
Oh, how can I
pick a bale of cotton?
Oh, how can I
pick a bale a day?
Oh, never will I
pick a bale of cotton.
Oh, never will I
pick a bale a day.
Oh, poor Oh, Eli,
take a bale of cotton.
Oh, poor Eli,
take a bale a day.
Oh, he jumped down and turned around.
Take a bale of cotton.
Oh, he jumped down and turned around.
Take a bale a day.
But never will I
take a bale of cotton.
Oh, never will I
take a bale a day.
He got a little sister, she can
take a bale of cotton.
He got a little sister, she can
take a bale a day.
But never will I
take a bale of cotton.
No, never will I
take a bale a day.
Oh, you jump down and turn around.
Take a bale of cotton.
Oh, you jump down and turn around.
Take a bale a day.
But how can I
take a bale of cotton?
Oh, how can I
take a bale a day?
Now, in real life, of course, that song could go on all day. That would be how you would accompany yourself as you're going through this monotonous chore. To explain the lyrics a little bit about, you know, never will I pick a bale of cotton, there's a reason for that. Now, depending on who you ask, like the booklet that I'm reading here says that a bale of cotton weighs 1,500 pounds. And I looked
it
up on the—
It was an enormous task.
Enormous. In fact, from what I see now, a bale of cotton after it's compressed and cleaned is actually 500 pounds. But I guess you'd have to pick more than that in order to have a certain amount that it would yield a clean. So maybe 1,500 pounds would be the rough cotton as it's picked. And the average person, a great worker, would barely be able to pick 500 pounds at best. And that's somebody who was working a Superman.
From sun up to sundown.
And that would be like being able to run a 4.5 minute mile if you could pick 500 pounds of cotton. It was almost an impossible or certainly a Herculean task. So that is why they're saying never will I be able to pick a bale of cotton, because it was just something that was just too big for any one man to do, because a bale required more than that. Now, this next track is very interesting because this is sung by a woman named Aunt Harriet McClintock. And as this song was recorded, she was already over 80 years old. Now, she was born a slave on an Alabama plantation. And on this record, she gives us one version of a song that she sang as a young girl on that plantation. Check this out.
Way down in the bottom, what a cotton so rotten. You won't get your 100 here today. Way down in the bottom for the cotton so rotten. You won't get your 100 here today. Poor little Johnny, he's a poor little fella. He won't get his 100 here today.
And how did, when did you, where'd you get this song?
My mama learned it to me.
How long ago?
Oh, I don't know, because she's been dead about near 30 years.
Did you ever pick any cotton?
Me, yes, sir.
How much did you pick a day?
Oh, I pick about 150, 125.
Oh, there you go. There's, that hike is very intense. When you get, when you hear it from the person who's actually picking the cotton there, that moves me, actually. Now, if you listen to the words of that song, there's a couple of things that she's saying. At one point when he says that poor little Johnny, he's a poor little fellow, he won't get his 100 here today. She means that he's not going to be able to even pick 100 pounds of cotton, which means that he might be in trouble when he gets back. What they're talking about, you've probably heard the song Cotton Fields and When Those Cotton Balls Get Rotten. Obviously, that's a derivative of this song as well, as she's singing it here, which is about when cotton gets moist and rot sets in and you can't pick cotton when it gets rotten. And that's more or less exactly what the fact is here, about not being able to pick enough cotton at all. But there was Aunt Harriet McClintock giving us a much more personal idea of what it was like to pick cotton. Now, these work songs began to also infiltrate regular life, post-slavery life. You'd begin to hear singing all over the place. As African-Americans infiltrated themselves into society, things would begin to change. That was my fault, or I just want to start that at the beginning. I made a mistake on that one. Well, what happened is, of course, now they have to infiltrate themselves into society, and these work songs would end up affecting them, not just in the fields, but they'd be singing in other places. Here's an amazingly strange example of what I'm talking about. This would be if you were on a slave farm, or if you were perhaps in a prison. In this instance, this is taking place in a prison camp. This is what would happen. This is how you might be woken up in the morning if you were in the South at that time.
This is the way I wrap the boys up at Camp Free every morning. Parchment, Mississippi. My name is Crapot.
Ah, one morning at the break of day, Lord, I heard that black woman softly calling me.
Imagine being woken up that way every morning. Now, it's probably an old tin can that he's got that he's using as a percussion instrument as he's walking around the camp, banging on it to wake everybody up. Then he'll stop and he'll do that high plaintive cry, which already, as you can tell, has got hugely strong elements of the blues. And it also is very related to what we played in show number one. We were talking about the hollers, It essentially is a holler right there that is now being...
It's also related to a morning call to prayer.
Which is related to, right, exactly, all of that. It's like you can begin to see how it begins to come full circle, and that relates a little bit closer to our first show, as it is now being incorporated for secular use and for everyday life, which is a good example of why I wanted to play a couple of these next tracks now, some of these things that we've got. This is a good example. Again, this is one of Harry Belafonte's recreated tracks. This is an example of street cries. Street vendors, as they're walking down the street selling their wares, they'd call out to the people and let them know what they had. This is a fairly good example, I would say, an excellent example of that right now, as performed by Valentine Pringle with Harry Belafonte's oversight.
I got sweet peas. I got pork. I got pork peas. I got string beans, I got turnips, I got collards, I got them, I got fish, I got fruit, I got vegetables, yes indeed. I got every kind of vittles. I got anything you need. I got a, I got a man. I got pompanos. I got catfish. I got buffalo.
There you have it. Now he's the I got a man.
Yeah, he's got a rolling grocery store.
Exactly. Now, here's another example. Obviously, we're talking about work songs. I mean, singing was so prevalent in order to survive, since it was part of the African Americans' culture for years under slavery. Why should that have changed? They had to sing to survive in order to coordinate their movements for certain tasks that required them to be doing certain things the same. So now that they're being integrated in other ways into society with jobs, or actually, you know, with bosses and things that require them to do the same thing, well, a lot of the same habits had moved on even with the times in post-slavery years. Now, here's the notes on this next track that I'm about to play. It reads like as follows. Greenville is a port on the Mississippi River between Vicksburg and Memphis. Joe Shores is a pilot on the night run of the A.C. Joyner ferry boat between Greenville and Arkansas City, and he was 52 years old in 1939 when this recording took place. He had worked on rafts, barges, and riverboats that transported cotton, lumber, and the products of the region. One of his jobs was to test the depth of the water with a weighted line so that the boat would not go aground, particularly when approaching the shore. He would call out the depth, singing the calls, so that they would be heard more distinctly to a deckhand, who would then relay the information to the pilot. The calls would change at every quarter fathom, which is 1.5 feet. Now, this piece actually starts out like an interview. Because the person who's actually doing this man, Joe Shores, believes that he's supposed to just explain what the situation is, and eventually he decides to go ahead and perform it rather than just explain it. And I think this is a pretty fascinating recording of how singing was utilized for work.
That's 10.5 feet. Mark Twain is 12 feet. Quarter Twain, 13.5. Half Twain is 15. Quarter Less Three, 16.5 feet. Mark Three, that's 18 feet. Quarter Three is 19.5.
Mark Twain is 12. Yes. What is 6 feet? How do you say it? What is 6 feet?
6 feet. This says 6 feet. That's 1 fathom. Uh-huh. That's 1 fathom.
How do you suppose let's bring the boat in from bottom, no bottom, on very, very shallow water, so where it would really be a ground.
Well, bring it in from deep water into where she'll stand, you know, to cross over. All right, sir. I'll start over again. No bottom. Safe base.
Quarter twain.
13 and a half feet. That's about low as it generally gets, you know, with a loaded tow.
Of course, she's unloaded.
Unloaded, she gets around 12 feet. That's Mark Twain.
Mark Twain is about the usual.
Yeah, it's for the get over safe with a towboat.
So Mark Twain just gets you over safely with it.
Yes, sir.
Well, suppose you have an unloaded boat.
You have not unloaded boat? Well, that will get over. That's the same.
Uh-huh.
12 feet.
Can't go any lower than 12?
Oh, it's according to the draft, light draft boat.
Well, very light draft boat. It
goes over around 9 feet.
Uh-huh.
9 feet.
And if it gets less than that, they'll ground.
They'll generally ground.
I didn't know that Mark Twain was a depth marker. And that's where the author got his name. He really was heavily entwined into the river life then.
Absolutely, yeah. Samuel Clemens was living by the river, and he would hear these calls as they were sung. I found it a beautiful thing, and he thought that Mark Twain would work brilliantly as a nom de plume, and that's how Samuel Clemens became Mark Twain, actually. And this is a good example. He would hear these work songs being called out. It's interesting that it also has something to do with the birth of the blues. Here's another one, actually, that is boat related. This is called Steamboat Days, which is actually it's an interview and a little bit of some work calls. I think you'll be interested in this. This is what would happen. This is an example of what would happen as they were loading and unloading the boats. They'd be taking these big bags of fertilizer or seed or whatever, and men would line up and they would just throw these bags down on their back, and then they'd have to walk off, carry it to where they were going, and then the next guy would come up and the same thing, throw a big bag sack down onto his back where he would go and unload it and take it off. I think you'll get the idea as you listen to this track.
Richard, tell about your steamboat days.
All the way from Memphis to Selma on Warrior River on Mr. Pickin's boat. My boat man, the name is Mr. Will. My straw boat, the name is Jim. When we go unload fertilizer, we had to go down the hull and walk up tall steps. And every time you come up on top and throw it down, the fellow will tell you when you come as a calling. You go get your sack. Whoa, back, buddy, whoa, back. I got a coach here to fit your back. You walk on upstairs and throw it down, bim. Said, ain't the right sack, hurry back. Here go the next buddy. Whoa, back, buddy, whoa, back. We got a coach to fit your back. That on up the stairs, bim, bim, bim. You throw it down, he said, hurry back. That's the wrong sack. Him did calling. Whoa, back, buddy, whoa, back. We got a coach here to fit your back. Right upstairs with it right down, bim, hurry back. That's the wrong sack. Whoa, back, buddy. Whoa, back. We got a coach here to fit your bag. Bill of cotton on that and back then. Up there, threw it down. Bim. Hurry back. That's the wrong bill. Ain't got no bill yet. Whoa, back, buddy. Whoa, back. We got a coach to fit your back. Bale of oil they put on that and back. Right upstairs, then they throw it down. Bim. That's the wrong bell. Go bring me the cag. Whoa, back, buddy. Whoa, back. We got a coach here to fit your back. Turn your back around, he put in a barrel of sugar on your back. Rub that, threw it down. Bim, that's the wrong barrel. So go bring me the cag. Whoa, back, buddy. Whoa, back. We got a coat to fit your back. Right back downstairs. Barrel of lard or something right on your back. Go right back and throw it down. So go back and bring me the pig. You just bought the show. Whoa, back, buddy. Whoa, back. I got a coat here to fit your back. Right down there and put a ham of beef on your back. Throw it down. Bim, that's the wrong piece. Go back and bring me a whole cow. Whoa, back, buddy. Whoa, back. We got a coach here to fit your back. That's the wrong piece. Bim. Go back and bring me the captain here. That's the last go. That's directly.
Do you mean that one man could carry a whole bale of cotton?
Whole bale of cotton. If you can't carry a whole bale of cotton, you ain't got a job on that. They examine all the men there out to see, can they tote it? If you can't tote it, they won't hire you on the job. Examine it through and through, lungs and everything, to see, can you stand this heavy existence? If you ain't directly tote your load, they ain't going to have you on the job at all.
Well, one man couldn't carry a barrel of sugar, could he?
Yes, sir. One man carry a barrel of sugar. It's a whole lot different than men. Some can't carry a keg of sugar, and then some can tote a barrel.
Well, did you ever carry a bale of cotton by yourself?
Many times. When I was a young man, I stout in the shoulder. Since I got weak in the knees and neck, I can't carry it now. But a young man, I carry it all right. It's according to men's, you know, when they examine men. They examine them all up and see where their limbs stand. There's some double giant men and some single giant, you see. Yes. A man got a double horse, he's able in his ankle to tote it. A single horse man can't carry it.
A single what, man?
Single horse is called a single horse. He's a single bone. He's talking about two bones, you see.
Well, are you a double giant?
Yes, sir. So said by the doctor, the examiner. I used a double giant meal, and I tote a double giant load.
You used a what?
He's a double giant meal. I eat as much as two men, and I can tote as much as two.
Well, you can hear there he's starting to have some fun with what he's doing during the interview there. It's actually getting to be pretty amusing.
The women seem to find it amusing, right?
Well, what he's really talking about, I think, is about the strength of his bones, and he's talking about double-jointed probably in a not referencing the fact that he's actually double-jointed, but that he's got bones that are doubly strong so he can eat twice as much, which is why how he would get the job and be able to carry so much weight, which was an essential part of what he had to do. Now, I want to point out at this point, I think it's very important that I mention that almost all of these field recordings that I'm playing had been recorded by John and Alan Lomax for the Library of Congress. They had gone down south with really primitive equipment, although at the time it was the best that they could have had.
State of the
art, really, in 1933 or thereabouts when some of these recordings were made. And the point was, intelligently, to try to salvage a lot of these songs and what was happening culturally before it vanished altogether, because they had, of course, we couldn't record what was happening during the slave years because it didn't exist. But by 1933, it was recognized that an awful lot of what was happening with African-American culture and with American culture and culture in general was changing right before our eyes. So they had actually gone down to the South, which is, you can understand how difficult their job was, because they're going into the South, deep South, with these with this recording equipment. And this was when it was almost impossible for a black and white man to social. It was really impossible for a black and white man to even shake hands back then. That was just wasn't something that would be expected or allowed. So, you know, you'd have people
in certain quarters, I'm sure.
Police would come along and break them up and force them to separate. And there'd be threats of jail for both parties because they were interacting. So an awful lot of credit needs to be given to John and John Lomax, the father, and his son, Alan, for doing this work for the for the Library of Congress archives. Here's a quote of that they have in their booklets, giving their own opinions on this. According to, I believe this is the words of John Lomax, "I cannot too strongly express to you my own conviction that such a program would be a most important force in the life of this country at this moment. It seems to me that we can either educate the American people as to the value of the African-American cultural heritage and their national civilization, or sit back and watch the destruction and disintegration of that culture and that civilization by forces now so ruinously active in this world." The man knew what he was doing. Now, there's a few other things that I'll have to put. This next track is also one that was recorded by the Lomaxes, and I'll read these notes as well because I think this is fairly interesting. "With this recording, we now focus our attention on an African-American musical form that the Lomaxes hypothesized as the antecedent to the blues." That's exactly what they were trying to find. "If, therefore, one wants to find the Negro singing as he did before the Civil War when he was a slave," wrote the 19-year-old Alan Lomax at the time, "one needs to go to the state convict farm. Although these songs do not appear in white repertoires, they fit within what we're trying to do here, mostly because we're talking about the birth of the blues, and that's where this all begins to come from." So this next track is actually a type of song that could be used for road work, wheelbarrow, track lining, cotton chopping, hammer and pickaxe, rock busting, flat weeding, sawing, logging, loading and lifting, all essentially unaccompanied hollers and levee camp hollers that are now taking song forms. I think you'll realize this is how you would unload a trainload of steel for laying tracks for the railroad.
"Well, John Gibson and his men speaking to unload a carload of steel. Oh, boy, steal him on the north end. Help me out, father. Walk over close by with him now. Teddy, lean down. Oh, step back, boys, and get another piece now. Oh, feel him on the south end. Help me out, short falls in the nose. Walk over close by with him. Teddy, lean down. That's all right. Oh, boy. Step back easy now. Break him off in the short quarters and walk over close by with him. Teddy, a lean down. That's all right. Boy. Walk over close by now. Feel him in the north end. Help me out in the south end quarters. Walk over close by. Lean down. That's all right. Boy, step back and deal him on the north end. And help me out in short quarters. Walk humble and don't stumble. And lean down. That's all right.
Boy, I just have to observe that it seems like the blues were born out of a lot of hard work.
That's truer words could not be spoken. I mean, you could just see, I mean, what the blues stand for. I mean, blues are about experience, and there's a little bit of pain, or certainly it's about, you know, life's trials and tribulations one way or the other. And it's so deep because the roots run so deep. They run through generation after generation of generation and of what they had been through post and during slavery, and even back across the Atlantic, back to the, as we covered in our first show. I'd like to remind everybody that you are listening to WHPC 90.3 FM. The show is called American Hit Radio on Fridays. We cover how music changed. Today we are looking at the birth of the blues. We have a three-part series to cover this, and this is the second part of that series to cover the birth of the blues. We will be back to complete this with our final episode of Birth of the Blues next Friday. Now, there's one other work song I want to play, and this is absolutely fascinating because you hear them working. This is about as real as it gets. This is pretty much, you want to know how the railroads of this country got built? All you got to do is listen to this track. It's all you need to know. Here are a bunch of workmen, again, in a from Dallas prison, with a track called Dallas Railway.
Poking to hammer ringing, Dallas Railway, Dallas Railway. Hammer boatman to hammer boatman calling, Dallas Railroad.
That's about as real as it gets. I mean, you can hear them tamping the tracks down
right.
On this track as they're working. And you hear them giving work orders. Move on up. Move it up. You know, the little asides beside that are happening in the middle of the track. It's fairly fascinating. It's incredibly fascinating to me. I want to play this next track as well. This is another work song. This is about somebody who actually, you can tell by the words, it's about somebody who's able to escape from the prison farm where he was working. It also could have had to do with, historically, the song is also quite old, so it could have been escaping from virtually anything. I want you to remember this song. I will probably be referring to this next week when we get to W.C. Handy, who actually borrows from an awful lot of these traditional old songs when he was doing some of his own published material. So we'll probably be touching on this again next week. Meanwhile, let's hear Lightnin' Washington, who you hear on some blues compilations, by the way, from time to time. Even the one that was put up by Martin Scorsese, he appears on that with a track. In this instance, this is Long John.
Black Betty, bam, bam. Oh, Black Betty,
bam, bam.
Black Betty, where'd you come from?
Bam, bam.
Black Betty, where'd you come from?
Bam, bam.
Well, I come from Canada. It's a Long John.
It's a Long John.
It's a Long John.
Oh, man, that's about as good of an example of call and response as you're ever going to hear. And it's got elements of the blues inside and out. It's obvious that that is a precursor to what eventually became the instrumental, you know, the blues as they are eventually became formalized. Now, this next track, you heard a couple seconds of it actually before. We'll play it completely now. It's still a short little number, but this is fairly intense. And I can play this because we also have a modern day reference that we can maybe compare it to, which I think might be a bit humorous. But the track is called Black Betty, and there's nothing humorous about this if you listen to it. It's actually about the Black Betty could be, in one instance, is a woman with a crazy blue-eyed baby. The implication is that it has something to do with the prison guard with Black Betty. And there's also rumor that Black Betty was actually the one of the whips that was being used on the prisoners. Mm. That's another one of the
double
entendres for what Black Betty is. And there is yet another thing that there, according to Hiss, there was, instead of having buses in prison, they had a barred truck. It was a bed on the back of the truck had a cage, like they would put a bear in it, and they just called that truck the Black Betty. So all of these things come together, none of them really positive connotations, but this is definitely part of the blues right here.
Black Betty,
bam, bam.
Black Betty,
bam, bam.
Black Betty, where'd you come from?
Bam, bam.
Black Betty, where'd you come from?
Bam, bam.
Well, I'm coming for Canada.
Bam, bam.
Well, I'm going to taste the Canada.
Black Betty was your number.
Black
Betty was your number.
750.
Oh Lord, Black Betty. Oh Lordy, Black Betty. Black Betty had a baby. Black Betty had a baby.
And a damn thing,
oh Lord, Black Betty. Oh Lordy,
Black Betty.
Oh Lordy, Black Betty.
Damn,
oh Lordy, Black Betty.
Now right there, what you're hearing is essentially a rhythmic background while the lead singer goes through some incredibly intense emotional thoughts that I mean, it's about as powerful as the blues can get, but it's kind of funny in one sense, when you think about what it actually became. I don't know if you were around in the 70s, you might be aware of a track that actually took that for its inspiration. And this is what happens when a bunch of, like, I guess, like white suburban guys from somewhere in the United States decide to take this authentic stuff and turn it into a modernized version of the blues. Heidi, this is on you.
And that there is what happens when you let the white boys play the blues.
Ain't the truth? I mean, I'm telling you. The thing at the time, it sounded like any other great rock song. But when you this is just goes to show you that the blues had such influence. But
no,
if you are,
those guys missed the boat.
If you're ignorant of your roots, it just, I mean, it also has a lot to do, I think, with why a lot of African Americans gave up on the blues after a while. It was almost like it was co-opted. It became something silly. In the hands of these rock and roll bands, it took. If you listen to the first song, it was so deep and intense that it could make your hair stand up on the back of your arm, and it's almost like a nightmare. The first song, and then you hear it done there with the electric guitars and the drums, and it seems like something completely different, completely
right.
Foolish.
All they're missing is the pyrotechnics.
Now, there's one. We've only got a few. Only about one quarter of our show is left, and I still want to cover the folk aspect of it. And I wanted to mention how there were also a lot of influences that came from white European culture as well. And a lot of that ended up coming in through children's songs. A lot of the things that were being played were brought in from Europe. And I just want to play a couple of examples of some kids' songs so you can see what I'm talking about.
Little girl, little girl.
Yes, ma'am.
Did you go downtown?
Yes, ma'am.
Did you see my brown?
Yes, ma'am.
Did you buy me any shoes?
Yes, ma'am.
Stockings, too?
Yes, ma'am.
Put him on the train?
Yes, ma'am.
Did the bell ring?
Yes, ma'am.
Which way did he go?
Choo-choo.
All night long.
Choo-choo.
All night long.
Choo-choo.
All night long.
So that was actually a European song called Old Witch at one time, they say. But what's happening here, of course, is you hear it becoming very syncopated and something very cool and very unique to African-American culture. Here's another one, which is like, I think this is like really pretty funny, too, in humor, if you listen to the words. This is called Pulling the Skiff.
I went downtown to get my grip. I come back home just to pull in the skiff, just to pull in the skiff. I went upstairs to make my bed. I made a mistake and I bumped my head, just to pull in the skiff, just to pull in the skiff. I went downstairs to milk my cow. I made a mistake and I milked that sow, just to pull in the skiff, just to pull in the skiff. Tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow never come. Tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow's in the bone.
See, music is everywhere, every single part of the culture, and it's coming in from all different ends. And even the, I guess when you would sing a baby to sleep, lullabies, rockabye songs, that sort of thing, were also, very many of these came over from Europe as well, but they became something much more deep and soulful once they came into the American South, as you probably have heard in some other versions. Here's one that from a field recording, a very short version of a beautiful lullaby.
Go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep, little baby. Mama gone away and Papa gone too. Go to sleep, little baby. Go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep, little baby. Mama gone away and Daddy too. Go to sleep, little baby.
All right. Now here's just to make the point a little bit deeper. Here's another track that is so obviously from Europe. It's incredible. I don't understand how it's possible that an African-American could have ever even learned this song, but its European roots are so obvious. But listen to this and you'll see how there is definitely some element of Europe, of European culture, I should say, that eventually infiltrates its way into the parts of the ingredients that give birth to the blues. This is called the Fox Hunter's Song.
Ready? Two young men come riding by, and they're dressed very fine. Said, Johnny, don't you want to go to hunting? I have hounds of my own, just as good as ever known. There is none in England can beat 'em. God knows. There is Roxanna and Tim, Counselor and Jim. There is none in England can be them. There is little old Mary Jane, she's the leader of the strain. There is none in England can be them. God knows. As I walked out one morning, take the morning there, I spied the green grass, it was quivering. Oh, I spied the old sly fox, he come slipping from the rocks. It was 3 days and better we caught him, God knows. I put my horn up to my mouth, and I sounded north and south. Well, lead dog, she didn't dare to hear me. Oh, I blew my horn so loud, it rung like thunder in the clouds. And the old dog, she never looked behind her, God knows. Saddled up my old gray horse, and I throwed my legs across. Oh, now I'm going fox hunting. Run and tell Miss Mary Ann, she must do the best she can. I am now going fox hunting, God knows. Was up the highest hill and down the lowest drill. The old fox was making for the water. We will all go home and leave the fox alone. And we rouse him so early in the morning, God knows. I learned that from my father.
How long ago?
Oh, I couldn't tell. I learned that when I was about, I suspect that was 40 years ago.
Very old. Now, you might be wondering why I'm playing a song like that as far as influence on the blues, and I'm going to make that connection right here with this next little storyline on one particular song that'll end our show. I want to play now a track called The Maid Freed from the Gallows. Now, this is as performed by a musician who is an expert in English folk songs. This is going to be one of the original English folk songs. If you remember, we spoke on an earlier show about child ballads, mm-hmm. where they tried to document all of the songs that came from England, the folk, you know, folk songs, and trace their roots and everything. This is a child ballad number 95. As I said, this is entitled Maid Freed from the Gallows.
Hangman, hangman, slack your line, slack it just a while, for I think I see my papa coming, traveling many a mile, traveling many a mile. Papa, papa, has you brought gold for to pay this hangman's fee? Or did you come to see me swinging high from this hangman's tree, high from this hangman's tree? Daughter, 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 I brought no gold for to pay this hangman's fee, but I come to see.
Now, believe it or not, that's a man singing. That's John Jacob Niles. And he's obviously, I presume that what he's doing is trying to sing that in as traditional a form as he possibly can to the way that the song was as a child ballad from its European roots.
Right.
Now, it's not even for certain that the song was from England. It's very possible that it could have been from another part of Europe, you know, whether it was Sweden or it's not really known, because the song has appeared in very many different places throughout Europe. What's interesting is that the song found its way to America, and here is, check this out now, thematically and everything else that's going on, here is Lead Belly telling the same story.
Now, this is a boy who was in jail. And them times, you could buy yourself out. Way long time ago, about 100 years ago, you might say. It wasn't so much money to support jailhouses at that time. It takes money, and this woman's son is in jail. And every time a mother would come, he'd ask her, what did you bring your mother? Father come, he wanted to know. Because if they go hang him just 3 days in front of that time. And so if he get a little money, they turn him loose, because that would help support the jail. And when his mother come, but he said, mother, did you bring me the silver? Mother, did you bring me the gold? Mother, did you bring me the mother? Keep him together for you. What did you bring? What did you? How did you bring me? Keep it from the gallant fold. She brought everything she could rake and straight. Then I brought some silver. Then I brought some gold. Then I brought you everything. Keep it from the gallant fold, yeah. I brought it. Yeah. Mama, I thought it. You would bring me. Keep it from the gallant fold. Here come his father. The poor boy was behind the bars, he run up when he saw his body so plain. Cause the mother done been there, she done left something. So when he walked over, he said to his father, Father, did you bring me the silver? Father, did you bring me the gold? Father, did you bring me the father? Give me one together for you. Yeah. I brought it. Yeah. Papa, I sold it. You would bring me, keep from the gas bowl. His father looked at his eye and said, then I brought you some silver, then I brought you some gold, then I brought you everything, keep you from the gas bowl, Lord. I brought it, yeah.
I brought it. Son, I brought you deep from Gettysburg. Oh, women. Yes. Here come his wife. He had a wife at that time. When his wife come, he's so glad to see his wife, he won't know what she brings. What did you bring in silver? Baby, did you bring me to go? What did you bring with your darling? Keep them together for you. Yeah. What did you bring? What did you? What did you bring me? Keep them together for you. You know she gonna bring everything that's in town if she could get it. If I brought some silver, if I brought some gold, if I brought a little everything, keep them together for you, yeah. I brought it, yeah, you ought to hold it. I brought you, keep from getting full. Oh, baby, you're great. Now here come his so-called friend. His friends liked him when he's outside, but when he got behind the bar, that's just the place they wanted to see him. So he went up and saw his friend. He didn't think they had nothing to bring him, but he wanted to see their face and see how they talk about him. Hear what he said to him. Friends, did you bring me the silver? Friends, did you bring me the gold? How did you bring him, my dear friend? Keep him together for you. What did you bring? What did you bring me, King from Gettysburg? I hear what they brought. I never brought you no silver, never brought you no gold. Just gonna be able to see you hung up in the Gettysburg, yeah. He noticed, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm brought you, get on the Gettysburg. He goes on and lands what he told his friend. Never brought me no silver, never brought me no gold. Just give me all to see me, I'm gonna get it for you. I thought it, yeah, they never brought it.
That is one of my favorite, most intense blues performances I think I've ever heard. It was huge for me to discover that. That's Lead Belly performing his version of Gallows Pole or Mama, Did You Bring Me Any Silver? Well, I want to thank everybody for listening. We'll be back next Friday as we continue and complete our tale of how the blues began, or birth of the blues. But we'll leave you with this last song just to show you how everything goes full circle. As you know, we started with The Maid Freed from the Gallows, which was the child ballad number 95, and you heard how that was incorporated by Lead Belly there. This just shows how things managed to go full circle. I think the song will speak for itself. Meanwhile, thanks everybody so much for your time. And Heidi, thank you so much. Earl, thank you. And we'll see you next Friday at 5.
Bye.
See my friends coming right a many a mile. Friends, you get some silver, you get a little gold. What did you bring me, my dear friends? Keep me from the gallows pole. What did you bring me? Keep me from the gallows pole. Silver, I couldn't get no gold. You know the way.